Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined, as always, by the legend Les Thatcher, who is usually in a pretty happy mood. But I would like to ask all of you, if you're able, I mean, if you're driving, don't do this because it would be dangerous, but bow your head for just a second or two, close your eyes, let us please observe a moment of silence for the Ohio State University, as they were all killed on the football field last Saturday, much to Mr. Thatcher's chagrin, for the second straight year by the Michigan Wolverines.
God, yeah. Well, now Michigan is 2-9. When you look at it that way, it's not so bad, is it?
No, but I'm in all honesty, not even trying to, you know, have a little fun with you here. That win this past weekend was, to me, even more impressive than last year because, A, nobody thought they had a prayer this week, this past week. And to put another 40 on them the second straight year in their building, I mean, that was a statement.
Yeah. You're right. And you know what it looked like to me, and then some one of the talking heads on one of the sports stations, I don't remember who it was, said similarly the same thing. But I'm watching, I'm thinking, you guys are working to stop the run at all costs from Michigan running. So, and at the beginning of the year, there were several people made a comment that Ohio State had some of the best defensive backs in college football. But when you're bringing them up, there's not four of them back there. And then one missed tackle or something, you know, and that was the way they really started their scoring. Michigan did with, you know, some long passes and you know, the defensive back couldn't make the tackle.
Well, that was the thing I didn't understand about the plan after watching Michigan's star running back, Corum, try to give it a whirl and have to leave after two carries. That guy was one of their best players and got injured the week before, tried to play this week, and it didn't work out for him. It's like, and don't get me wrong, Michigan ran all over him, but that was at the, you know, tail end of the game when, know, Ohio State had everybody up front just desperately trying to stop something, anything, to get a little momentum back. And Mr. Edwards had two really long runs. Congrats to him. But the point is, everybody figured without Blake Corum, Michigan was dead in the water on the running game. So why did you stick with that plan?
I give up. I don't know. And people are talking that there are alumni already wanting Ryan Day's head.
That's ridiculous. I mean, the guy's only,
of course it is,
the only two games he's lost in conference since he took the job.
I know. I've said for years, it's tough. It's a bigger pressure cooker coaching college football than it is pro football because of the, graduates that have money involved and want somebody's head the minute they don't win what they expect them to. So, but yeah, you're right. We got our asses handed to us, but we will be back, baby. Well, what I'm hearing here too, in around Knoxville is, we may end up with Ohio State in a bowl game. I said, well,
you don't want that.
I don't.
No, I mean anybody from Knoxville.
Oh, no.
They better not ask for that.
No. And the Bengals are coming back a little bit. And UC is not as strong as they were last year, University of Cincinnati, but they're doing okay too, I guess. We'll see how Deshaun Watson and his ladies do. Now that he's back.
They're going to be, I understand a few of them are going to be, I don't think they're going to be in the stadium, but they're going to be outside for some demonstrations before the game.
Is that right?
I believe so.
Wow. All right. Well, such is life, isn't it? But, you know, college football playoffs are going to be so different next year. 12 teams is just too damn many. I'm sorry. It is.
Yeah, I would have been happy with 8.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, at the max, I think that would have been fine. But anyway, we shall see. We have other fish to fry. Speaking of that, have a wrestling world which needs our help,
and that is true. But let's start by saying something nice about that wrestling world. Obviously, we're not going to go over something that happened more than a week ago, but the best stuff in
WWE.
Well,
wait a minute. Before we say something nice,
go
let
right
me
ahead.
Get my. My cut and paste guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah, go ahead.
sent me a little thing off the board. I don't go on the board for those listening, because I might tend to get cheeky. Anyway, somebody listened to it last week, thought that my comment that I would pay Ace's bail if he punched Kenny Omega in an airport somewhere. And I didn't realize, but this person thought I was doing a cheap imitation of Jim Cornette.
Oh, if only he knew.
Yes, if only he knew. First of all, I would never try to do a cheap any type of imitation of Jimmy because I am not that glib. But then I don't have to try to be Jimmy or anybody else when I'm talking about wrestling because I've been doing this, over going on 63 years. So I kind of have a clue. Of course, I realize I don't have a website. I don't write a newsletter, and I'm not an expert like all the millions of fans. But anyway, my point is this. I put myself in that position, and the best I know, Ace has not publicly made any statements pro or con about the altercation in the back after that pay-per-view. And I would assume that that was expected of everyone. So if I were in his shoes and I saw what happened on TV, if I happened to be watching or something, it would piss me off. And I would want to take a shot. But like I said to you before we start recording, we've all been through this where when we were kids, some little boy, the little pain in the ass, stood a block away from you and thumbed his nose and called you some names or something or whatever. And you would, because he wasn't near you, it pissed you off even more. And so you might take off running, but he still was always a block ahead of you, and you never got to him. And when I saw that, that just reminded me of that. And that really upset me because I had a kid like that once when I was young. But, yeah, I think professionally, Omega, now, let me say this. Some people still think that's all a work. And you know what? If it is, then they pulled off a hell of an angle and they fooled me too. God bless them. But if it's not, then I will stand by what I said. Ace, I'll pay the bail because he needs somebody to put him on his ass because it's bullshit and childish and it should never have happened.
Well, perhaps
and
this
we
week's,
move on from that.
Perhaps this week's ratings knocked him down a peg or two. We'll get to that a little later in the program. But we wanted to start off with something nice and also something that happened about around the same time as Ohio State, Michigan, so that we can say our piece about it and move forward to the events that have taken place more recently over the course of the last few days. But Sami Zayn's just out here doing the Lord's work, Les, between SmackDown, the Survivor Series, and their celebration Monday on Raw. This continues to be the best thing on television, bar none.
It certainly does. Going back to a week ago today, or tonight, on SmackDown, the way they built to Saturday, to the pay-per-view, and I know who all the guys were in the match, but one of the focuses was what's going to happen with Sami and KO. And start on Friday night when Jay overheard Sami and KO talking, and Sami didn't want to tell him. I say, oh, my God, you know, he lied, and they're going to catch him. And they did. But he just fessed up to Roman, told Roman on Saturday why he didn't mention it to Jay. Anyway, long story short, if you watched it, you watched this whole thing unfold, and it added levels of interest to War Games just to get there from Friday night through Saturday. And I'm telling you, I don't give a damn. You can agree with me, disagree with me, or whatever. But that these guys are telling the best story in wrestling right now. And when I say that, it's because it's believable. And it hooks you, and it makes you want to see what's going to happen next. It's like, you know, and I know, you know, a lot of people, Sammy's ass is in trouble now. You know, they've caught him. And we, you know, so, and if you stop and think about this, this is what, when I talk about peaks and valleys in a wrestling match or in a good drama, this is what we're talking about. It's like Sammy's ass on the line. Oops, no. He's even in tighter now than he was 36 hours ago. So, yes, you can say what you want about everything else, but the bloodline, that whole story, where they go, man, Sammy needs to stay with them. I don't know for how much longer, but they need to ride this because it is the best to me. And I say this because I've written a few stories over my years, and I've been in a few that other people wrote. And this is solid, man. It really is solid. And my hat's off to the whole bunch of these guys that are doing their job. And, I mean, that's Jay and Jimmy and Soho and Roman and Paul and Sammy and everybody. So, you know, my praise, man. They are the yardstick by which we should all be measured in terms of angles currently in professional wrestling, I think.
Well, you and I talked about this off the air, and I don't want to get too deep into it, but, you know, there is word out there that there are plans in place. After all, we are sitting here as we record this on December 2nd. The Rumble is not all that far off, and of course, that starts the road to WrestleMania and some ideas about this potentially coming to an end sometime between now and then. You know, I'm with you. I don't know that I'm in that big of a hurry, even though I understand that this group imploding in some shape, form, or fashion would probably make for very important matches at WrestleMania. Man, if it's going good, let's not reinvent the wheel.
No. And how long we have been doing Sammy trying to get in, getting his foot in the door, then his whole leg and maybe his butt. But this has been going on almost this entire year, has it not?
It has.
And so, you know, the point here is having been a booker, a promoter, a wrestler. If it's running, rolling good, ride with it, you know, ride it out. If you see it starting to slide, if it takes your numbers down a little bit, if people show that, oh, well, you know. But right now, again, it's got my seal of approval as far as being the best angle in the industry right now. And that's the thing I can mention too. Is the great bookers never set a timeline necessarily on something like, you know, it's let's start and see where it goes. Sometimes you shut them down before you got too far off the ground because the story sounded great when you were talking about it, but didn't work out as well. And, but yeah, these guys are on it, and whoever is helping them put the ideas together behind the scenes, my hat's off to him or her or whoever the hell it happens to be, because these guys have got it, man. They're rolling. They really, well, you know, let's talk while we're there. Let's talk about that pay-per-view a little bit. I thought the three-way with Bobby and Friggin, and I'm so tired of hearing Seth Friggin Rollins. Jeez, do you know him? I want to ask the commentators, have you ever met this guy? It's all right to call him Seth or just Rollins or just Friggin if you want, but it's like, anyway. No, the finish there, I thought timing was good. They went into it good. And the point is, they got the belt on Theory, but it didn't hurt anybody. Beautiful. Timing was good. This was a hell of a pay-per-view. It was. It was extremely good. The women's War Games was kind of a mess, honestly, with some big spots. And maybe it's good to open with it because you got it out of the way, but it certainly wasn't something you know that you would use to warm the people up. But the three-way, yes, that was stellar. The finish went really well; it was great. And then the men's War Games, and it comes down to we're waiting to see what Sammy's going to do to KO or what KO's going to do to Sammy, and it just went well. And they blew it off they didn't blow anything off. They blew it out at the end, man, and got that main event over like $1 million. So my hat's off to the workers and the writers and the referees and whoever the hell else needs to be given a compliment. They deserve it.
Let's take a moment, too, to talk about someone who was, I don't even think it was arguable at the time, who was at one point the biggest star in the company, and the return of Becky Lynch, which obviously happened the night before Survivor Series on SmackDown, and her return has continued on, because I know you really enjoyed that segment too.
Yeah, well, the pop, when her music played, when Bianca said, "We didn't come alone," and Becky's music started to play, that building went crazy. That's, and I said to you, that's the biggest pop I've heard for anybody. Maybe going back to Cody, you know, showing up at WrestleMania. Mm. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, because obviously the crowd was about 40,000 smaller or whatever. But, yeah, she and I think she changes the dynamic of the women's roster in SmackDown because she is, to me, you know, I talk about the technical aspect, never mind how you look or what your gimmick is or you heel or babyface. She's probably the best worker on SmackDown women's roster right now. She and Bayley should have some good matches, and at some point, her and Bianca. But now, you want a superpowers for a women's team, Bianca and Becky.
Yeah.
Or something.
If you something. Wanted to put a spotlight back on those women's tag team titles, that would be a way to go.
So, yeah, I think WWE from last Friday, Monday wasn't bad either. In fact, Jim, I think, stayed awake through the whole 3 hours. So
that's the bar these days, huh?
Yeah. That's, well, he gets crazy over 3 hours of Raw. And we've all been there, right?
Oh, I mean, sure.
Yes. But, yeah, I think their shows is I will say NXT was average. It was okay. Just they're trying to throw too many fresh faces out there that just aren't ready to be out there. And I think that's going to hurt their numbers. Although, for them having just trainees, if that's some of the top-level experts over at AEW said they're just using trainees. Well, guess what? Their trainees are drawn pretty close to what your numbers are, too. Currently, are they not?
Man, I mean, you know, when you look at the total composite number, you might say no. But if you look at some of these segments that AEW has put forth, just not even in terms of quality, just in terms of viewership over the last month and some month or so, you know, it's not like they've run away and hidden from NXT on some of these segments when you look at them. You know, the NXT can now see, at least occasionally when you go segment by segment, can actually see AEW without a pair of binoculars.
Yes. Well, you know what? I think we've talked about, you know, and again, the newness is worn off. It's a new company. We got to watch it. It's a new nightclub. We got to go there. There's a new ice cream place. Got to go see if their ice cream's good. But then at some point, some of those people don't go back, not because it's a bad product or a bad ice cream. It's just that it's not that much better than what they had before. And I think we're in a position here now where a legitimate booker, and I'm not trying to be a smart ass when I say that, but somebody who understands, like we were just talking about with the Bloodline and that story, right? And they, you know, got a lot of people, a lot of titles, a lot of factions, and I think that's, you know, again, that's been my complaint almost every week is, you're trying to put 10 pounds in a 5-pound bag. You're trying to get so many people over so fast that they're, none of them are really getting over to the extent that they could if it was done properly. Am I making sense? I hope.
You are. I'd like to move into some of the elements of this past Wednesday's edition of Dynamite and, again, get into this numbers conversation because we've been beating this drum for, you know, more than a few weeks now. The pattern, unfortunately, continued here. And I think this was much more alarming to me than anything that happened on Thanksgiving, because obviously with the holiday and three big football games, including one at night, you can give what happened last week. And those numbers weren't terrible at all by any stretch of the imagination. You can give it a pass under the circumstances. But man, seeing this one this week and having a chance to look at the quarters, which Dave has, by the way, in this new edition of The Observer, which is up on the front page at f4wonline.com, we have to get into these ratings again, and not necessarily segment by segment, but a couple of things that jumped out at me I want to bring to your attention. And we can do all that after you let everybody know that there are some wrestling DVDs out there that, unlike dynamite lately, people will not be able to turn away from.
Well, I hope anyway. You're right. Yeah. We have produced Wrestling from the Heartland, the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2, and it's over 6 hours of content each on each of those sets, and they are both two DVD sets, matches, interviews, and extras. Joe Dombrowski, who is currently doing MLW, and Lord knows, he did the Ricky Steamboat One Night Only in Raleigh, and Joe's a hell of a hand. Anyway, Joe does most of the play-by-play, and I'm covering, you know, the behind-the-scenes and, you know, the human interest stuff about the talents and so forth and so on. But anyway, you can get those at joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And then, of course, the Brian Pillman Show's Anthology, the 20th Anniversary. It's a four DVD set, over 15 hours of content. All four of those great shows from 98, 99, 2000, 2001, with matches, interviews, footage of the auction that we had at each of these shows, the awards, and so many extras. And you can get that at pillmanshows.com. Or the other two addresses, joe-dombrowski.com or prowrestlinglibrary.com. And Joe and I do the voiceovers on these as well. And we also have Brian Jr. and so many of the guys who were attending. And for those who don't know, for young people who weren't even around wrestling back in 98 or 2000, even 2001, these are the only shows you'll ever see in history that had WCW, WWF, and ECW talent all on the same show on the same night. And some great matches in these shows. And anyway, so you can check those out as you like. And if you're on the PillmanShows.com site, click on the About and you'll see my name pop up. And there's some of my memorabilia and stuff showing on there. And they're going to add some more of that stuff as it comes along. But yeah, check those out. And I think you'll enjoy those DVDs. Vic, you can speak for that. You've seen those DVDs, right?
I have. They're incredible quality, both in terms of the footage and just the match quality themselves is so much more than worth it. And as you mentioned, the thing, especially if you're in my age bracket, where the, you know, you don't understand just how difficult it was at that time to even imagine all three companies having performers on one show. You know, today it may not sound like a whole lot since Tony has been successful to his credit in opening up said forbidden door. But at that time with those companies, that was thought to be completely out of the question and absolutely impossible. And you made it happen.
We did. Yes. I'd say you said me, but I appreciate that. But yeah, it took a village to raise a child, as it were. And I am so proud of all the people, and that's the volunteers, the wrestlers, the referees, everyone that made those shows possible, because it was a freebie for all of us. I mean, the wrestlers showed up on their days off. That we're talking about the stars now, the guys from WCW, WWE, and ECW. This was their day off, and we put them up in a hotel. We fed them. But they work their asses off for nothing. So, yeah, check those out if you get an opportunity.
Now, unfortunately, not nearly enough people have been checking out Dynamite lately. The numbers aren't terrible when you look at the composite of the 2 hours. But that disturbing pattern we referenced a few minutes ago has continued with a very strong start and then a slow but steady descent until you get to the main event segment, which unfortunately usually ends up being pushed off the cliff. And that did not change with this particular episode of Dynamite. But before we get into the numbers, and I do want to talk about the numbers before I get your take on any of the stuff that was on the show. It's not like this was a bad show. I'm not here to, you know, throw dirt on the show or the quality of the program. You had a great match with Danielson and Dax. You had Ricky Starks cementing his number one contendership. Still have a lot to look forward to on the microphone between Starks and MJF. You had another fantastic A-plus segment with MJF and William Regal, and potentially a lot of news coming out of that, which we'll also get into after we discuss these numbers. And you had what should have been, a marquee match that could have held or maybe even grown the audience based on, you know, having the VPs, the founders of the company, in this high-profile best of seven series, and they're in desperate need of a win, being down 2-0. I mean, if I tell you all that, this sounds like a show that should have done really well. But the number was not drastically different than last week on Thanksgiving, which was actually really good for that holiday and the football games. And again, we started with over a million viewers. Oh, I even left out the fact that we've got a new situation here with Adam Page returning. Thankfully, he's obviously in good health. Congrats to him. And John Moxley and Adam Page is something people are going to want to see. So, I mean, there was a lot to like on this show. But again, you start with over a million for that angle with Moxley and Page and the start of Danielson and Dax. And then everything just starts falling apart. I mean, there wasn't another segment on this show, Les, that drew 900,000 people, let alone a million. So I got to raise
my
hand.
And the main event ended up bottoming out for the whole night, isn't it right?
It sure did, and we'll get to that. But, you know, I got to raise my hand because I've been bitching about Bryan Danielson and his placement and what they've been doing and how he could be something for them. And this was a terrific match with Dax. And, it, you know, the second part, segment number two, which did have a good portion of the match, went from 1 million at the start to 877 by the finish. Now, I maintain that it does have something to do with the way Brian's been used, and it also has something to do with the fact that Dax has only won one singles match on TV all year, and if he had won a few, maybe the outcome would have been in doubt. But it doesn't change the fact that the numbers went down drastically after that opening segment, and that continued. Right. In fact, from the rest of the night, you know, the only one that really gained viewers was MJF. And it's criminal that that didn't get a chance to be seen by more than 889,000 people, because that was spectacular stuff. But again, and before I give you the main event numbers, I do want to point out, because I am a fair man, that they likely were not done any favors by the segments that preceded them with the ladies. You had the Willow Nightingale match with Anna Jay, Ruby Soho coming back, then Orange Cassidy and QT backstage setting up a match for a Rampage, and then Jade, the Acclaimed, and then the start of the Trios match. But listen, after MJF's 889, we went to 869, 838, 801, and the actual main event, not the intros, because that was part of the segment that preceded it with 801, the actual main event match did 792,000 viewers. I mean, you got to be kidding me. What is
going on? And that's the third of the best of seven.
Yes, in a match where the heroes, if you will, because they are the ones who I think are favored by the crowd, the Elite, were desperate for a win. This was like a must-win situation for them. And yes, again, I pointed out they were done no favors by what was in front of them. But if you're in a main event segment, there should be some expectation that you can, you know, regain some of things that were lost or even take it up even higher. And I have to give credit where credit is due here while we're talking about numbers, because I've been on Chris Jericho's case and he's dropped the ball in that final segment a couple of times over the last few months. But if you take a look at the numbers for the Thanksgiving show, which we won't get too deep into the weeds to here, but I will point out that it had the same kind of pattern, starting strong and sliding. But Jericho and Ishii grew the number at the end of the show. You know, wasn't any great shakes because of what we had at the start, a million, but they grew the number a pretty respectable amount for what's been going on lately. And that's what you would expect to see in that last segment, particularly with three guys who you've clearly prioritized over CM Punk, without shadow of a doubt here, who was a guy who was drawing a million a segment no matter where you put him. So to see this has to be disheartening.
Yeah, it should be, or you've got blinders on. You know, this is, you know, something here. You know, you call it nepotism, but best friend, you know, or the old guys club or whatever. We all, that goes on in this business. It does. But at some point, it doesn't come down to, well, he's my best friend. He's not drawing me anything, but I'm going to put him on top anyway because he's my buddy. And I see that at an independent level a lot. You know, it's not good for business at any level. And I don't know if that's why these, you know, why this is happening, because Tony has certain people that he's immured with, or that he feels he owes them, or that whatever. But part of it comes down to storylines too, you know. And why is there a best of seven with these six guys? Can you give me a legitimate answer?
I have absolutely no idea.
I don't. Well, and here you mentioned QT. And Cassidy, they're having a lumberjack match. Can you tell me why?
I don't even want to know. How could I know?
I don't know either. And it's just because it's a lumberjack. Let's have a lumberjack match. These, and I know that, like, in there, they didn't call it a scrum or whatever, but the thing after the pay-per-view, the WWE pay-per-view, Triple H was mentioning about building matches and how one match, you know, well, and he's right. What he was saying about, what was it, cage matches or something different from war games. And, you know, you have to build to certain matches a certain way.
Oh,
and
yes.
He's right.
He was making the comparison about, you know, some of these themed pay-per-views we've had over the years with Hell in a Cell or Elimination Chamber or Money in the Bank. And as you said, he pointed out the difference between your typical cage match and a Hell in a Cell match. And he didn't like the idea, at least we know he wasn't keen on the idea of Hell in a Cell being a standalone event, because then you have to just, you know, sort of contrive a way to get two people into that match. That's a match
that
should be asked for by one of the competitors because the situation has gotten that serious. Whereas a match like Money in the Bank isn't something where you have like seven people with an issue and you have to settle it with that. That's something that could stand on its own as a show because of the attraction of what that briefcase means.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Sure. And yes, and he's right, you know, but here, that's it. This, and again, there may have been some talk, some idea. It may have been some, something that either, Pac's team said or the Elite's team said, but there's a reason. If somebody can give me a legitimate reason for a best of seven, other than it's something different. And if you can't, then I'd say it. Part of the reason is no, Bill, but we were just talking about the Bloodline and the Sami Zayn stuff, right? How long have we been going with that? And it gets better as we go, does it not?
It absolutely has. That's got to be the longest angle for anything in God knows how long. Maybe since... Maybe since the one Jericho won't be quiet about, and nor should he, by the way, with Michaels years ago.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. But yeah, so that's the thing. Just having a lumberjack match. Well, and if remember what we saw, the girls' lumberjack match a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
where they were get out of the ring anyway because they were on two sides of the ring and not the other two. I mean, you got to even know what the hell it is you're advertising, and then know what to do with what you've advertised. And saying, well, Tony's young and he's you know, he's creative and he wants to reinvent the wheel. I think. It's proven itself. It doesn't need reinventing. It's been proven that for a long time. And things, I'm sorry. I thought Dax and Dragon stole the damn show. They wrestled. Isn't that clever on a wrestling show?
Oh, they were outstanding.
To have a wrestling. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right. Little things, Dragon in singles, you know, he's gotten beaten. Dax has won one single that he's been in. So the fact that Dax asked to wrestle Dragon, that would have been effective if there'd have been something before that. Am I making sense, I hope?
Yeah. And even if it was just randomly out of a tag match, as it was when they set that up on Rampage the Friday before,
yes.
If you could have at least said Dax Harwood 9-1 this year, you know, so don't sleep on him in a singles match against Bryan Danielson because he's not just a tag team guy, you've at least got some kind of intrigue.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely. And then coming up next Wednesday is a battle royal. How many of those have we had in the year 2022?
Oh, goodness.
In that company.
Yeah.
See, again, we're having a battle royal. How do we settle this? Let's have a battle royal. How do we settle this? Well, you know,
that's another part of the problem because, you know, I'm sure somebody is listening to us talk about that right now and saying, yes, but that's what they do at this time every year for the Diamond Dynamite Ring, which is what the battle royal is for. Great. So then don't book so many multi-mans and battle royals in the few months before that.
Exactly. And how many we have between now and the end of the year? Maybe none. But the point is, yeah, just throwing a stipulation match or a gimmick match in doesn't automatically draw an audience. It stories, making people wait to see something. That's what, you know, stories, that type of story is what makes me want it. I can't wait till Yellowstone starts running Series 5. Season 5 on Peacock, because that show has got me hooked. I wish I could say there's a, you know, other than the Bloodline story, something else in this business got me. I mean, Dax and Dragon hooked me Wednesday night, and then it went downhill from there. And, you know, it's It's and I want people that if we some new people that are maybe hopefully listening to us and will continue to. This is not we hate Tony Khan or we hate AEW. This is just stating facts. And the fact is that these things obviously are there are certain guidelines in professional wrestling like there are in everything else, you know, baseball, football, basketball, soccer, whatever, that are proven and you go within that framework. You know, change it because of the time, because of the era, because of some technicality, whatever. But within that framework, you stick to those guidelines. Well, we're going to reinvent wrestling. Good luck to you. If that's your idea, Paul Heyman did it once, and that company is gone now because it burned out on doing the same stuff over and over and over again. Are there still hardcore groups around? Sure. But nothing at all like ECW.
No.
But yeah.
Before I ask you about the MJF segment and William Regal's potential future, I'm sorry, I do have to sidetrack us for a second because I imagine there's at least one Yellowstone viewer who probably thinks you misspoke when you said previous seasons of Yellowstone are on Peacock. Because you're absolutely 100% correct. And if you're thinking to yourself, but wait, Victor, isn't that on the Paramount Network? Yes. Yes, it is.
Yes.
So don't ask me why Paramount, a.k.a. CBS, is allowing the catalog of Yellowstone on Peacock, but they are.
Yes. It runs there after it's run on Paramount.
Yes.
And I didn't buy Paramount because it would have taken me to another tier and another expense.
Right. And that's my point. They have their own streaming service, but their biggest show is running on Peacock. I can't. I don't know.
I don't either. But I'd be happy when it starts running on Peacock because then I can watch it. But you know what? That's the same kind of excitement I want to have for wrestling. I'd love to have it for all wrestling. I didn't have it for every match I saw in my life when I was young and in the middle of the business. But I just don't see enough of Dax and Dragon stuff or Bloodline stuff. It's good, solid stuff. Or Regal slipping the Nux to MJF. We didn't see that coming. Nobody expected it. And man, it blew the place up. And now you were going to ask me. Go ahead.
Well, who saw what happened with William Regal and the Nux this past Wednesday coming?
I don't know, but my head should be bleeding from scratching it and wondering what the hell are they doing here.
My goodness. But first of all, the brilliance of the segment, though. Let's talk about that. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes, the segment was, it was brilliant. You know, Mr. Regal, these guys are putting each other over, Regal and MJF, and it's all good and that. And finally, I didn't realize what was coming until MJF was right behind him.
Yes.
And I thought, son of a bitch, right? You got me. But the first thing I said when it was over, I looked at my friend Jim and said, what the fuck? Where do we go with Regal? They have just turned Regal to be one of the hottest heels in that company 2 weeks ago or whatever it was, 2-3 weeks. And to put him with MJF, the angle they worked back at the pay-per-view, him slipping in the Nux was great, as I said earlier. And now, what do you do? You've just made, you can't turn him back babyface. It's not like Moxley's going to say, well, Regal, you know what? I feel bad for you. Come on back with us. It leaves Regal to do what people are speculating he may do. And that hadn't even crossed my mind until we got talking about it earlier today.
Yeah, well, obviously a lot of people saw that and started asking the question, what's up with Regal's future? Because as you pointed out, it's not like he can go back to the Blackpool Combat Club. I mean, I'm stretching here, but I suppose if you wanted to, you could see Danielson leaving the group and, you know, pairing up with Regal and allowing Regal to guide him, I guess, under these circumstances. But that's a reach. Let's be honest.
Right.
Even though there's that relationship there and he saved Regal last week from what could have been a beating, you know, you look at that angle and you think to yourself, there's nowhere for Regal to go but Stanford, really. And you also right. know that the man in charge in Stanford, Paul Levesque, would never have allowed William Regal to get cut if he could have helped it at the time that it happened. And he also, of course, on the night of Survivor Series, because there were War Games matches, put out on Twitter a montage of Regal announcing War Games in NXT all these years, talking about how this night won't be the same without him. So there are a lot of people wondering whether or not this means William Regal is returning to WWE. It was believed that he was under a 3-year deal to AEW when he came in. Dave was talking about this earlier in the week and said that he believed the deal was 3 years as well, but that clearly something was going on and there's some stuff happening that he cannot yet discuss regarding Mr. Regal and his contract status. So, you know, and by the way, I should also point out that the folks at Fightful, if you don't check out their site, reported that the talent in the locker room believes Regal's contract could be up at the end of the year. So there's a whole lot of speculation here and not a whole lot of answers at this point.
Yeah, there's not. But what they did this past Wednesday just leaves him nowhere, basically, right? He better call Triple H and go back.
Yeah, it's a great angle, but it leaves him in a terrible spot.
Yes, it does. I mean, what do you do with him from this point? Does it make him a sympathetic heel, a bigger heel, or lesser of a heel? I mean, it did nothing to protect his heel persona. You know, I mean, because you can take the stand. Well, he got what he had coming and start to forget about William Regal if you want at that point. And with him, and to me, the thing, I wonder if indeed he is returning to WWE, how long has this been known by him, Tony Khan, and WWE? Because the reason I'm saying that is they haven't stopped building the Blackpool
Combat Club. Yeah.
Blackpool, yeah. But they have just kind of been there in the last month or so, wouldn't you say?
I would, yes. Yeah, in terms of, you know, how it started, which was scouting the younger talent like Wheeler Yuta, there were still other people that were on that hit list originally when the group formed, but other than Claudio coming in at the end of his WWE run, we really haven't had much development in terms of the club either. No, you're right.
No, we have not. So, yeah, so I'm wondering if this is, you know, if between Regal and Khan and Triple H that they've known this for some time. I don't know. But, yeah, what they did Wednesday night, I say my head should be bleeding talking about scratching it, just wondering what the hell are you people think, or what are you smoking, or what the hell are you doing? Because it made no sense whatsoever. And if they, in turn, have something that I think, then I'll give them credit for that too. But actually, it makes sense that he would go back to WWE. And, you know, sadly enough, talk about Tony Khan signing some strong people. He's losing some strong people, too.
You know what? I bad host on my part. When we were talking about Dax and Danielson, I should have brought this up. But since we are talking about valuable people potentially leaving the company, what about those comments Dax Harwood made recently saying that FTR has considered taking a year off from wrestling on television? And the idea that, as they understand it, FTR's deals come up at the end of April of 2023. And just the whole situation in AEW. I mean, obviously, they've been good company guys in terms of not really speaking out as to whether or not there's anything happening there in terms of bad blood between them and the Young Bucks. They obviously did have a terrific match on television a few months back, so you'd like to think that whatever, if there was ever anything, it had been smoothed over. But, you know, we never got that rubber match, so it had people wondering again. And then you've also got what's happened with CM Punk, because as Dax said in the comments he gave earlier this week, he was leery of Punk coming into the locker room, and Punk had immediately won him over. And it's really interesting to hear all the stuff that came out in the last month or two regarding Punk and the way he's viewed in the locker room. When a guy who's universally known as a good man in Dax Harwood gives a quote that says, when he first came into the company, I remember talking to Cash and saying, if this guy comes in and says something to me about how I dress or whatever, we're going to have a problem. And he came in talking about Punk and was the complete opposite. Dax said he always had his door open, invited people in, watched matches of the young wrestlers that asked him to, stuck around to the end of the show, and anybody that had questions, he would answer it. He loves wrestling just like me, just a professional wrestling fan. I talk to him every day. And whatever he decides to do, I hope it brings him happiness and joy because he deserves it. I mean, are FTR really on that far the other end of the locker room? That they're really that far removed from all these people who have allegedly said this guy was dragging everybody down?
You know what? I've never met those guys, Dax or Cash. But as you know, I love their work. And Cash and I have communicated on Twitter a few times, and I like him. I do. He comes across as a very legitimate, nice guy who loves the business. And, man, yeah, they deserve more. You got a team with how many belts? 3 or 4 different belts now. They don't have the big one, I know. You know, that the Acclaim, who are much greater workers, obviously, because they can scissor. I'm being a smart ass here again. So, you know, it was like Dax and Cash felt that they weren't being utilized properly in WWE, so they didn't stay. Are they being utilized properly now? No. They should be featured. They should be your, even if you've got a heel team that's the AEW world champions, these guys should be breathing down their neck. And how many times have we seen this guy, we've seen Dax in singles matches, which they're good. He's a damn good worker. But the point is you got a team with 3 or 4 belts, and they don't work as a team. And if they do, it's against guys who, I mean, now they do okay with the flippy flop guys. But again, can you imagine, I'm just grabbing names here too, Danielson and Yuta against these guys in a real good wrestling match. Or, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities and they just haven't been pushed that hard. And you would have think, I realize on this site there are people who think they might possibly be the second best tag team in the universe today. I say they're better than the second best. They are number one because they wrestle. And why are they not being, why wouldn't they be in a best of 7 with somebody or such and such? You know, they're basically wearing these belts, but they're a secondary team if you look where, for the most part, they get placed on shows and who they're able to work with, right?
Yeah, for sure. I've been preoccupied here looking at this because something popped into my head since you started talking about Dax, and obviously we've been down on the fact that he's done such a good job in singles matches this year, and really they haven't gotten behind him. And I'm not saying he should be a champion of any kind on the singles level, but if you're going to keep putting him in these marquee matches, he probably should win a few. And I'm just looking at Dax, right, on the AEW website, when you go to the roster page, it does, to their credit, break everything down for the individual wrestlers, their singles record, their record as a tag team, and their trios record. And I'm looking at this, and we'll put the trios aside. Dax has wrestled 6 singles matches, and since AEW doesn't really do house shows, at least not right now, all of those had to have been on television. So he's got 6 total matches as a single on television this year. You know how many FTR has on their record as a tag team for the year?
3.
9. And that 9 has to count those matches, the matches with the Briscoes, on the ROH pay-per-views. So
sure,
he may have wrestled as many or more times on television this year, AEW TV, as a single than FTR has as a team.
Yeah.
I mean, if that doesn't tell you everything you need to know.
Yes, and I know the story is that the Bucks don't want to work with them because they'll, whatever reason, I don't know. And if that's the case, that's bad business too.
It's bad business, but man, the match they had a few months back should have put that to bed. They were fantastic together.
Yeah, But again, it's just, to me, and I have never spoken to Tony Khan. I don't dislike the man. I, from all due intent and purposes, want to hear, he's really a nice guy. But I think it's called throwing stuff against the wall to see what sticks. And a lot of it's not sticking. Because a lot of this booking is, there's no rhyme or reason to it. You know, I'd like to say, well, yeah, Pox, Trios, and the Elite, I can't talk, you know, they've been going at it for this and this and this and this, and finally, this is the only way to settle it, the best of seven. Let's see, why are we doing this? Well, they had one match. Oh, okay, well, then that deserves a best of seven. There's, you know, again, no real build, no storyline, no depth to any story that you could build here.
That's the word, depth. I mean, you know, Obviously my mental Rolodex goes back a lot further than our younger fans, but you're talking about depth and best of seven series, and it just immediately got me thinking about Nikita Koloff and Magnum TA. And how deep-seated that rivalry was in the mid-80s when they did the best of seven over the U.S. Heavyweight Championship, which is now the U.S. title in WWE, currently held by Austin Theory. And everything that went on around that, the initial challenge, the whole thing where they insulted Magnum's mom, and then Magnum gets so angry that he couldn't respond at this being disciplined by the NWA, and then he punches the president of the NWA. For disciplining him. Talk about, you know, I'm going to get my money's worth if you're suspending me. I mean, so there was a whole lot that went into it. And of course, in the mid-80s, you're talking about the rivalry between the USA and Russia and the Cold War and everything that was around that. There was depth to that. And there was a reason for a best of seven series because the belt had been held up after Magnum punched out the president of the NWA. So there was a reason for them to have a best of seven because they were the top two guys.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You know, again, I say this over and over, and maybe people get tired of hearing it. I don't know. But, you know, if you watch a weekly TV series, it's build. Especially if it's not like, well, some of the cop shows, they solve a case every show. But some of this is you carry it on to the next week, and we're talking about Yellowstone, or if you go back to Justified, which was a great show, you know, and I'm not seeing anything here. Just, I can't wait to see so-and-so against so-and-so, except, you know, and the bloodline grew on me. It wasn't like when it started, I thought, this is going to be great. I didn't know what it was going to be, but again, it's a combination of in-ring talent. It's a combination of good stories. And a combination of making you, the viewer, want to see something, or how it's going to grow, you know, how does it fester from here, or how does it get better from here, or what happens from here? And I just don't, you know, I watch Wednesday night because we have this conversation on Fridays, and because I've been a part of this business for damn near my entire adult life. And I respect the business. I love the business. And I wish to hell a lot of the people in it that don't seem to show that they love it or care about it, what did, you know? So, yeah, it's a shame.
Well, I know that you love giving back to the business every chance you get by helping shape the careers of those who are on their way up. And this is the point in the program where I will ask you to let everybody know where they can get a hold of you for bookings and weekend training camps, as well as some T-shirts, which are available at Pro Wrestling Tees.
Yes, sir. Well, let's start with bookings. If you would like to, I can do one-day seminars or do weekend camps. I prefer the weekend camps because obviously more time with the athletes. They can learn more. I can teach more. And it's just more beneficial to everybody concerned. But for either, feel free to contact me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. I'll be more than happy to send you out the information, get with you on the phone, and we can work out the details. And as far as pro wrestling T-shirts, I happen to be proud to say that I am one of the three people that put out the first ever pro wrestling T-shirt on the market in 1972, and that was the Briscoe Booster Tee, which is now available on Pro Wrestling Tees, put out by Jack, Jerry Briscoe, and myself, artwork by Jerry the King Lawler. And you can get that, as I said, at Pro Wrestling Tees. Or if you happen to be a Les Thatcher guy, you can get I'm a Les Thatcher Guy T-shirt there as well. And I guess that about kills it for us today. Have we created enough problems that I can get some nasty comments on the board yet?
Well, we're still in better shape than Ryan Day in Ohio State.
Yeah, all right. Smart ass. pass. Be that way.
All right. Before I get stretched, we appreciate you spending some time with us here this weekend at Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. He is the legend, Les Thatcher. My name is Victor Sosa. Thanks again for hanging out with us. We look forward to talking to you again next week, although we may be up a little bit later than usual because of some scheduling stuff. But we at this moment, we still expect to be up at some point next Friday, correct?
Correct.
All right. So thank y'all for giving us a listen this weekend, and we'll talk to you again next week.